Now from the KSFR newsroom, at noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Thursday, September 19th.
A spokesman with the New Mexico Homeland Security Department says the Federal Emergency Management Agency is now looking at damage on public land and roads across the state. According to KOB-TV's website, Esteban Lujan says that FEMA is aware of the critical nature of the problems in New Mexico, which is seeking federal aid. He adds that the major challenges the state is facing at this point is providing resources to families and individuals affected by the floods and repairing roads. The swollen Chama River has led residents of another New Mexico community, Chile in Rio Arriba County, to take to canoes and rafts to retrieve their possessions. Heavy rains and flooding have caused millions of dollars of damage across the state. Meanwhile, authorities continue the search for an elderly Arizona man who was reported missing after being evacuated Saturday from a Mogollon bed and breakfast. He did not return to collect his belongings. The New Mexico Department of Health announced today three new cases of West Nile virus infection in New Mexico. The cases include a 56-year-old woman from Doña Ana County with West Nile fever, a 52-year-old woman from Lee County also with West Nile fever, and a 29-year-old man from Curry County who had the more severe West Nile neurologic disease. All three cases have recovered. New Mexico is among the top states in the nation when it comes to having its eligible children covered by Medicaid. That from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which shows New Mexico with 90% of its kids signed up, among only 19 states with 90% or higher. Matt Kennicott of the Human Services Department says the numbers reflect the department's efforts.
In past and recent years, we've had a great deal of outreach to especially the children's population in New Mexico, and we've done a good job of reaching out to the communities where we suspect uninsured children exist, and we've gone out and signed them up for Medicaid.
We'll be hearing more from Matt Kennicott as At Noon continues. New Mexico 3rd District Congressional Representative Ben Ray Lujan will speak today on climate change and its impacts on America's Latino communities. Lujan will be joined by Arizona Representative Raul Grijalva, a colleague in the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. They hold a media teleconference this afternoon hosted by the League of Conservation Voters. Surveys conducted by Public Policy Polling have indicated some 74% of Latinos believe climate change is a serious problem, a higher level than the 65% among all American adults. The New Mexico Public Regulation Commission has selected Severo Vince Martinez as its new chief of staff. He was chosen from a field of six finalists for the $90,000-a-year post. Martinez received a unanimous vote from PRC members at yesterday's board meeting. He had previously served as the PRC's Transportation Division Director. The U.S. Department of Education has approved the funding for Pell Grants at Santa Fe Community College for 17 additional courses of study. That gives the college 21 career certificates total for which such funding is available. SFCC's acquisition of the grants was based on meeting criteria that the program successfully prepares students to be employed and whose coursework is applicable to associate's degree in the same area of study. With heavy rains replenishing many of our state's waterways and reservoirs, the New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission has shut down its pumping of groundwater to the Pecos River. The severe drought conditions of spring have required pumping since March in order to deliver water supply for use by farmers in the Carlsbad Irrigation District, as guaranteed by the 2003 Pecos settlement. Surface water supplies have now reached robust levels, and groundwater well field pumping is discontinued through March of next year. The weather for Santa Fe, mostly sunny later today, highs in the mid-70s, and a 20% chance for afternoon and evening thundershowers. For Friday and the weekend, much more of the same. I'm Tom Trowbridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom, and we have much more of At Noon coming up for you in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
12 minutes past the hour as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. Recent weeks have seen the monsoons bring some much-needed moisture to the state, but as a side effect, we've seen flooding, severe in some areas. Floods pose particular danger to people who have private wells for their water. Joining us to discuss this is Dennis McQuillan, who is the Source Water Protection Manager with the State Environment Department. Dennis, private wells are still very much prevalent in New Mexico, are they not?
Yes, there are approximately 250,000, quarter million private domestic wells in the state.
What dangers do floods present for wells?
Well, if private wells, or any well for that matter, has been inundated by floodwater or even washed over and compromised, there's a potential for contamination because floodwater contains bacteria and other microbes from flooded sewer systems, from inundated septic tanks and drain fields, from animal waste, wildlife waste that's on the surface. So floodwater is full of bacteria and other contaminants that can make you sick. And if this water gets into the well or gets into a water distribution system that's been compromised, then you can get contamination of the water supply.
And you can't always detect contamination from either looking or trying to smell the well water, correct?
That's correct. You need a laboratory analysis to see if your well has been contaminated. And we use coliform bacteria. That's the industry standard as an indicator.
What should well owners do if their land has been flooded?
Any well owner whose well has been inundated or is at risk from contamination from flooding should perform a shock chlorination procedure. And basically this involves taking the sanitary seal off the well and then mixing up 1 quart of standard unscented laundry bleach for every 5 gallons of water. And you want to use about 10 gallons for every 100 feet of water inside the well casing. You pour this right down inside the casing, and then you open up all the faucets in the house, inside and out, and you drain the hot water tank until you can smell chlorine at every faucet in the house, and you flush the toilets a couple times. Then you go back and put some more chlorine in the well after you've shut the faucets in, and then you let this sit overnight, preferably overnight, or at least for several hours. And what this does is the chlorinated water goes all through your plumbing system and it's inside the well, and it disinfects, kills the bacteria that may have gotten in there. Then you come back the next morning or at the end of the disinfection period, and you flush your water lines, trying to minimize the amount of chlorine that you discharge to your septic system, because the chlorine can kill the beneficial bacteria in your septic tank, which treat your waste. And you may have a chlorine residual odor for a week or two, but it shouldn't be at a harmful level.
Used in those amounts, the bleach is not a danger to health, correct?
That's right. If you follow the guidelines, in fact, you can use bleach to disinfect drinking water on an emergency basis as well. There's another set of guidelines if you have water that is not sanitary and that's your only source of drinking water. You can filter it through cloth or a coffee filter and then disinfect it with household unscented laundry bleach.
Anything else for our listeners to know?
Right now, we have anywhere from several hundred, maybe upwards to a couple thousand wells that may have been compromised by the flood. And so we really want people to perform this shock chlorination on their private domestic wells if they're at risk.
Dennis McQuillan with the New Mexico Environment Department. Many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by PNM Resources Foundation, celebrating 30 years of giving back with $300,000 in grants to communities across New Mexico. The foundation announces that the Santa Fe Farmers Market Institute has been awarded a grant to install a water filtration system at the Farmers Market Hall. Construction will start soon. For updates about all of the grant recipients, follow PNM on Facebook.
12:16 here in the KSFR newsroom as At Noon continues. New Mexico is one of the top states in the nation for eligible children covered by the Medicaid program. A report from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, a public health philanthropic organization, shows New Mexico with 90% of its eligible kids enrolled. The State Human Services Department gives credit to its outreach efforts targeting children and focused on areas where large numbers of uninsured kids live. Joining us now is Matt Kennicott, Director of External Affairs at HSD. Matt, it's not often that New Mexico ranks high in a positive category, and perhaps you can tell us why this ranking is significant. In other words, what do we know about health outcomes for kids who have coverage and those who do not?
Well, in general, when people have health insurance, they receive a little bit more literacy about how the health system works and how things go. So what we see generally with people with insurance is better health outcomes and better health in general. One of the things that we're doing here at the Human Services Department with our new Centennial Care Medicaid program is implementing what we call care coordination. That'll be for adults and children and everybody in between. What that care coordination will do is help, we think, ensure better health outcomes than even just having just an insurance coverage option. So we'll be able to track people's doctor visits, whether or not they're taking their medications, and if they're doing their healthy things to make themselves healthier. And we'll have a person that can reach out to them one-on-one on the phone and help them lead healthier lives.
Is our state's high percentage of eligible children actually covered by Medicaid at all attributable to implementation of the Affordable Care Act?
Well, honestly, at this point, not yet. The expansion has not kicked in, and that will mainly cover adults up to 138% of the federal poverty level. New Mexico, for a long time, has covered a larger number of children under Medicaid rules than other states. We had a number of years ago expanded the eligibility for children up to 235% of the federal poverty level, which means we were able to capture more children than most states would in general. So it's work that has been done previously leading up to Obamacare, not necessarily because of Obamacare.
What are some of the impediments in capturing all eligible kids?
You're always going to have a certain population of people that you know, maybe they don't necessarily see the value in signing up for some type of insurance coverage, whether that's through Medicaid or other private options. Or, you know, you can't necessarily touch every single uninsured person. There are just some people out there that don't really want to talk to you. So, you know, we try our best to get to all of the communities and all the people that we can, but some people either don't want to be reached or don't necessarily see the value in insuring themselves or their family.
And anything else you'd like our listeners to know about the Human Services Department's efforts to insure more children?
I would say if you're lacking or without insurance coverage right now, people can definitely look at our website for the eligibility criteria, and if they meet the eligibility criteria, then they can sign up at any one of our offices throughout the state.
Matt Kennicott, Director of External Affairs at the New Mexico Human Services Department, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Programming on KSFR is underwritten in part by Medlin Mechanical, a full-service plumbing company specializing in green energy solutions for homes and business in the Santa Fe area for over 5 years. Medlin Mechanical's geothermal and solar systems are designed to cut energy costs and reduce carbon footprint. And tax credits for new systems are available through 2016. To learn more, visit medlinmechanical.com or call 577-8087. That's 577-8087.
Next week, on Wednesday, in Albuquerque, a job fair, a very large job fair, is set to take place. Augusta Myers is the communications manager for the New Mexico Workforce Connection, which is sponsoring the event. She joins us now. Augusta, can you tell us more about this event?
Absolutely. What's happening next Wednesday on the 25th between 10 and 2 p.m. at our Mountain Road office in Albuquerque is the Partnering for Success Career Fair. This is a semi-annual career fair that generally attracts more than 1,000 job seekers. This one in particular, we have at least 40 employers from local government, the private agency, who will all be there accepting applications and talking to the job seekers about potential positions. Now, remember, we're also gearing up for some holiday hiring, so this should be a really good job fair.
And among your varied list of participating employers are retail sector businesses like Office Depot, Lowe's, Verizon, and there are also state agencies such as the Motor Vehicle Division, Taxation and Revenue, and many others. This is an eclectic mix, yes?
Yes. This is an interesting job fair because it mixes the private and public sector. People will find all kinds of organizations and agencies there, from Bernalillo County to the city of Albuquerque, the Motor Vehicle Department, and then you've got your private sector employers as well. Comcast, any number of job employers will be there. And so I think people, job seekers, will find a real wide range of employment opportunities.
And tell us more about the New Mexico Workforce Connection you speak for. Is that a government entity?
Well, it is funded through federal funds, the WIA initiative, and so we use those funds that come from the state to deliver services to both employers and job seekers. And as far as the employers, what a lot of people don't realize is the employment tax pays for the services that are promoted through the Workforce Connection, and we actually have a job job-ready applicants for employers. We are just as much an agency that serves the business community as we are the job seekers. And for business clients, we can provide on-site training rooms. We have, as I said, job-ready applicants. We can offer training. Say you want to skill up your workforce, you need to take it to the next level. There are all kinds of wonderful services for the local employer in the central region, as well as for the job seeker. Job seekers can get job training, helps with writing resume. All they have to do is come in and register with the Workforce Connection, and it's a free service.
And though the job fair focuses on the central region, might there not also be opportunity for folks to acquire employment outside of that immediate zone, given that so many of our state agencies are seeking to fill slots?
I would imagine that would be the case, because some of these agencies have job opportunities outside of the central region. We have a Workforce Connection office, a one-stop center, if you will, in each of the four counties served by the central region, but that does not limit the scope of opportunities to that region, especially, as you said, with the government jobs that are involved.
Is registration required for next Wednesday's job fair?
It is helpful to be registered with the Workforce Connection of Central New Mexico. They can go to WCCNM.org and register, or they can come in to the office at 501 Mountain Road, in Albuquerque, if they want to pre-register. And this way, they're in the system. They can come in at any time and access computers, whatever they need, to help with their mission to get some employment.
Augusta Myers, Communication Manager for New Mexico Workforce Connection. Many thanks for joining us.
Hello, this is Tom O'Connor, music director and conductor of Santa Fe Pro Musica, inviting you to join us for the opening of our 32nd season. On September 19th in St. Francis Auditorium, award-winning pianist and composer Conrad Tau performs his music, as well as music of Bach, Prokofiev, and Rachmaninoff. And on September 21st and 22nd, he performs as concerto soloist in the Lenzic with the Pro Musica Orchestra and concertos of Mozart and Shostakovich. Among his many awards is the 2012 Avery Fisher Career Grant and Forbes' list of 30 Under 30. But more important than any of the awards is the way Conrad Tau communicates with his audiences. It's direct, unaffected, and riveting. Join us for the opening of Santa Fe Pro Musica's 32nd season. Tickets are available through the Pro Musica box office at 988-4640 or online at santafepromusica.com. Pro Musica is a tax-exempt organization.
1225 here at KSFR as At Noon continues, and we continue today with coverage of notable doings at Santa Fe County. On Tuesday, we heard about recent action regarding the county's Sustainable Land Development Code. Today, KSFR News reporter Marion Cox continues her conversation with County Commissioner Kathy Holian as they explore the ongoing developments with annexation. Here now is Marion's report.
Let's take on another issue that's a top priority for the county, annexation. That seemed so far away and so remote from most people's consciousness over the years, but annexation is knocking at our door in Santa Fe County, is it not?
Well, as a matter of fact, it's actually happening. Right now, the city is turning over the water utility customers that are in the unincorporated areas of the county whom they had been serving, and now they are going to become part of the county's water utility.
Give us an example of an unincorporated area that's going through this phase of annexation right now.
Aldea, yes, and Las Campanas. Quite a few people who live in the Las Campanas area.
Are you getting lots of constituent inquiries about this? Are people prepared for this phase of annexation? What are you learning?
It just so happens that the areas that are affected by this are not in my particular district, so I haven't been getting personal calls about this, but I believe that the commissioners who represent those districts probably are.
And very briefly, remind our listeners, what is the overall picture for annexation? How long will it take, and what is the ultimate result that both the city and the county are looking for?
Right now, we're doing phase two of the annexation, largely around the airport road area, as a matter of fact. The main thing that's going to take time is that there's going to be a phase-in of services. When we came to the agreement about how to proceed with annexation, the decision was made to phase in law enforcement and fire protection over 5 years. So that's not going to happen instantaneously. But I want to assure your listeners that people will be covered. When people call 911, they decide who is the closest who can help, and they send that party out, whether it's the city law enforcement or the county sheriff's department.
So again, should a resident find themselves in a precarious or a dangerous situation as it relates to fire or police, just call 911. Expect the same level of response you always get,
yes.
And the city and the county will work out how that gets done.
That's correct.
And I assume that anybody interested in attending or learning more about annexation as it creeps up and gets closer to them or their neighborhood can find that information on the county's website?
Yes, and there will probably be notices in the communities that are affected. There are a number of public meetings that are going to occur in the next several weeks in those communities to let people know what to expect.
KSFR's Marion Cox speaking with Santa Fe County Commissioner Kathy Holian. Now that school is back in session, there are more teen drivers on the roads. Unfortunately, accidents, including fatalities, are not uncommon with younger drivers. KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard offers this report.
As students head back to school, an increased number of teen drivers take to the roads. Doug Shoup is with AAA New Mexico and reminds us of the dangers of new drivers.
In fact, car crashes are the number one killer of teenagers here in the United States. And the risk of a child being hurt in a crash actually begins to increase at just age 12. Every day, car crashes end more teenage lives than cancer, homicide, and suicide combined. That is why it is so important to talk with young, inexperienced drivers, not only after they get their license, but to start way ahead of time. During their pre-permit phase,
there are some easily identifiable and preventable causes of teen driving accidents.
The thing about young people today is they're all connected to some sort of mobile device, many of them, and that's why distracted driving is a major problem for young people. It's for everybody, but especially for young people who are already experiencing the challenges of learning how to drive. Also, teens lack the knowledge on the road to know how to manage the distance between other cars, know exactly how much space they need to change lanes. they don't understand the concept of speed management as well, or going too fast for the conditions. For example, if it is raining or it is foggy, teens need to understand that they need to go lower than the speed limit and go for the speed limit for the conditions that are appropriate. You and I, we have the experience behind the wheel. We've actually been driving for many years now. We understand what it takes to maintain appropriate speeds, maintain the safe distances between us and other vehicles. We understand the traffic signs and traffic lights and how all of that works. Teens are just now getting out there, and especially these 14 and 15-year-olds. One other thing to remember is, they are really watching their parent or guardian's behavior. So if you want your teen to develop safe driving habits, you want to be a good role model. Learning how to drive takes a lot of communication, takes a lot of practice, and certainly takes a lot of coaching by the older, more experienced driver with those younger drivers who are about to head out on the roadway.
Parents and other family members play a vital role in educating young motorists.
Well, certainly you want to make sure that you talk with your teens about your experiences. What was it that you found to be difficult when you first started driving? By sharing those experiences, it helps your teen become a little bit more comfortable. Like, hey, you know, mom or dad or my aunt or uncle have the same questions that I'm having as I'm learning how to drive. Learning to drive can be an intimidating process, and so that's why communication is key. Also, patience is key. You also want to make sure that the learning to drive process happens when both the parent or guardian and the teen are ready. If one or the other is not ready at that time, that's fine. Talk about it. Talk about a time when you're ready, and you may want to wait and delay that process. You want to make sure that your extracurricular school activities don't get in the way of your safe driving practicing that's going to need to take place in order to go through the state's graduated driver license permitting process. So you really want to talk with your teens about the importance of buckling up. We know that teen drivers buckle up. The rate of them buckling up is actually less than any other driver of any other age. So you want to make sure that you're buckling up every time you get in the vehicle and you impress upon your young driver the importance of putting on that safety belt every time you get in the vehicle before you even leave the driveway.
AAA New Mexico is offering free driving workshops in Santa Fe and Albuquerque for young drivers and their parents.
AAA New Mexico is hosting the Dare to Prepare classes. These are free classes beginning on Wednesday, September 25th in the AAA New Mexico branch in Santa Fe at 3517 Zaffirano Drive, Suite D. That's going to be from 6:30 to 8:30. The next night, Thursday, September 26th, AAA New Mexico branch, Albuquerque East, located at 10501 Montgomery Boulevard Northeast, will be hosting another Dare to Prepare class from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. So they're two-hour classes. We promise that both parents and guardians as well as their teens are going to enjoy these classes. We try to keep them interactive. We keep the teens involved and engaged. And it's just going to be a great resource for parents to help begin the process of talking with their pre-permit teen drivers about what they need to do to get a license and keep a license. Now, to register, there's no cost for these classes, but you have to register online at AAA.com/safety4teens. So that's AAA.com/safety4teens.
Doug Shoup of AAA New Mexico. For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
12:34 here in the newsroom. At the bottom of the hour is the appropriate time for us to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
It's been way too long since our last one, so I am pleased to announce another installment of Things I Would Never Do If I Were a Parent, previously and more succinctly and accurately entitled Dumb Things Parents Do. Now, I'm all for parents encouraging their kids to be physically active. It's even better when the parents are also physically active with them. But use some common sense. Use any kind of sense. I was driving down the street where I live. It took a lot of self-control not to just break into song. and I saw two very young, very tiny kids trying to half-walk, half-ride their equally tiny bicycles across a broad, busy intersection. My first thought was, I'm glad I didn't run over them. My second thought, are the parents nuts? That was answered in the affirmative for at least one of the parents when I saw presumably the dad riding his bicycle 12 to 15 feet in front of his kids. Stupid, dangerous parenting on wheels. Parent, retire that behavior. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Marion Cox, Charles Maynard, and Tom Trowbridge. We'll be back tomorrow with more news of and for New Mexico for you, and as always, we hope you join us.